Welcome to the latest edition of the Big Pod Machine, all Cincinnati Reds all the time, with my partner Patrick Brennan and our terrific producer Phil Didion. I'm Gordon Wittenmeyer. Thanks for joining us again. We have one of the most important topics of the year to talk about, because it's the most important series of the year coming up for the Cincinnati Reds as we tape this. The Chicago Cubs are coming to town for the first time at the end of May. It's only May, Pat, but does it get any bigger than this for May and the Cincinnati Reds and what's at stake this season?
No, it doesn't. I think you and I agree on that. The Reds, or the Cubs, excuse me, leading the NL Central. The Reds are 5.5 back going into this series. If things really went sideways this weekend, they could be as much as 8.5 back by the end of the weekend. And you can start to see things unravel. And that's just the beginning of a really important stretch. And we've talked about this before, but where the Reds are starting to get into the meat of their schedule now. And it's getting close to being time to put up or shut up.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. There's six last place teams in baseball. The Reds have played five of them. They've 18 games against last place teams. They've won 11 of them. Whatever. 11-7. You've lost seven against those teams. You lost series to the White Sox. You just lost a series to the Pirates. You can't. So you didn't. Oh, nice dog back there. Is that your dog?
Yeah. I'm sure. That's Barney. Hey. Our viewing audience can be Barney.
Yeah, our viewing audience can see Pat's great dog there in the background. Anybody else, too damn bad, you can't see his dog. But anyway, just to get back to this point, they've had really one of the easier schedules on paper in the game, and they're sitting a game under 500 as they go into this. It's only going to get tougher the rest of the way. The Cubs, on the other hand, have had on paper the toughest schedule in baseball to this point. They've played every single tough team in the National League. They've still got the last place teams coming up, and neither one of these teams have faced each other yet. And here the Cubs were the fourth team in baseball to reach 30 wins, and they're sitting on a nice cushion at the top of the division. This despite they lost their best pitcher for the year, Justin Steele, to a Tommy John injury, and Shota Imanaga, their second best pitcher, is going to be out until probably sometime in late June. But they're hitting the crud out of the ball. Nobody's scoring more runs than these guys. It's kind of a scary proposition coming up. And to your point, and I guess my point, that how big this series is, the Reds won't say it, but they're sure acting like it. Hunter Green's back on his first eligible day from a groin injury to start the opener of this series. And they got Mr. 180 ERA, Andrew Abbott, right behind him, and Nick Lodolo, one of their top, you know, arguably top two pitchers, maybe certainly top three, just in terms of stuff and ability, going a third in that series. So they're gearing up for this. They know how important this is. And look, man, I'm gonna say it right now, they got the Cubs this weekend and next weekend. If they don't take care of business against them, one way or another, we're going to find out everything we need to know about this team. I just don't see an avenue to enough victories to get to the playoffs if they can't take care of business against specifically the Cubs.
Yeah.
And that's why I think, even though this is May, this could be critical for the whole season. And I know, man, old-time baseball people, and I'm one of them. I'm an old-time baseball people. They're going to jump down my throat for that. But really, tell me what I'm missing here. Is it too early to say that?
Well, look, it's not as if the Reds have played 51 games. It's not as if there wouldn't be time, in theory, for them to come back from a large deficit. You just... At some point, the Reds will have put enough on paper that we can reasonably say this is who they are. And I know you already feel that way in a number of ways. And yeah, do I think the Reds as constituted today stand a good chance of coming back from a deficit in the range of, you know, 7.5 to 10 games over the rest of the season? I wouldn't like their chances a ton, Gordon, but they have time and the quantity of games left on the schedule going for them. That might be all we can say about the Reds' chances, though. You know, yeah, I really liked the comparison that you made. You know, it's not as if the Reds don't have a puncher's chance in this series, though. And that's another thing I think they have going for them, Gordon, and a reason why I like them to tread water over these six games against the Cubs. This past week, while you were in Pittsburgh watching the Reds drop that series to the Pirates, I really liked your description. Refresh us. Funhouse mirror images of one another, the Reds and Cubs?
Yeah, because the Cubs score more runs than anybody in baseball. They just crush people. I mean, even against the Marlins the other day, it was a 1-1 game late, and all of a sudden they just score 8 runs in, like, I don't know, like an 8th inning or something like that, and all of a sudden it's a rout. This is what they've done all year long. The Reds, on the other hand, have, depending on what stat you like, you know, the top 5 starting rotation in the league in almost every category, top 2 or 3 in some of the major categories. They can pitch like the Cubs can't on paper. But, you know, the immovable object and what do you call that? The unstoppable force, whatever the hell that is.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's kind of people get what you got.
Yeah, so, I mean, is the strong pitching, especially the front end of it, enough for the Reds to counter a lineup that just got no? I don't think people looked at the Cubs lineup even after they got Kyle Tucker from the Astros in the offseason and said, wow, they're as good as, you know, Soto's Mets or Shohei's Dodgers, or even maybe the Phillies, you know, with Trey Turner and Harper and Schwarber and all those guys. But they have been. They've been every bit as good and better than those teams and deeper. What Kyle Tucker did for that lineup was lengthen it in a way. Left, right, switch, power. Pete Crow Armstrong, don't forget about him. His emergence, the two of those guys. Man, that is a tough, tough lineup to navigate. And so if they, you know, you wonder if good enough pitching is going to be enough for those guys, especially with all the wins they've banked so far against tough teams.
Yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Gordon. Just so people know, the Cubs, just under 300 runs scored, 293. And second to them in the NL is the Dodgers with 284. And, you know, the Cubs don't play bad defense either. Their runs against is pretty formidable, I'd say.
Well, that's a huge thing, too, that I didn't even bring up. We haven't talked about till now. They've got Kyle Tucker's a Gold Glover. Ian Happ's a Gold Glover. Nico Horner's a Gold Glover. Dansby Swanson's a Gold Glover. And the guy in center field, Crow Armstrong, is not a Gold Glover only because he doesn't have enough time to big leagues left to win one. He might win it this year.
Yeah.
They catch the frickin' ball, which means that if they get average pitching, you can turn average pitching into pretty good pitching if you catch the ball behind those guys. So, this is huge. I disagree. I don't think treading water against the Cubs these next 2 weeks is enough. I think they've got to just flat beat them. I think they got to win this two series. And maybe the most important one is this one at home with your best pitching going against them. I just don't see the avenue. You're not going to catch them otherwise.
Yeah. No, I'll be fair. We wanted to debate this subject, and I'm on the opposing side in that, obviously, I think there's time. I think they could potentially match up well with the Cubs. But I agree with you here that if you're going to do it, You got to do it head to head. Now, what will be, so you're thinking 4-2 would be a good outcome from these six games over the next week?
Yeah, I mean,
10 days.
I mean, hell, they just lost a series in Pittsburgh. Are you kidding me? They pitched well enough to hold Pittsburgh to 5 runs in 3 games and lost 2 of the 3 games. I would not go in saying, oh man, they need the sweeps. I mean, is that even possible? Of course it's possible. Is it plausible? Of course it's plausible. I mean, things happen in baseball. They might play up, they're playing at home. Who knows? Anything could happen. But no, I mean, to go in thinking sweep, no, you win the series. 4-2 would be pretty damn good. 4-2 would be great.
Yeah. So, Gordon, as things stand, the Reds are in third place in the NL Central, just given a kind of a holistic view of where we stand right now. Game under 500, 25-26. The Reds pacing the division at 30-20. Part of the reason the Reds were that at one point this week, they pulled back to 500 with the series sweep of the Guardians last week, and then were a game over when they took the opener in Pittsburgh, which you were present for. Part of the reason the Reds are even in this position today, we thought, I think you and I looked at each other in the middle, maybe 10 days ago when we were both in Cincinnati for Pete Rose night. And we thought things could have spun out against the White Sox, which was a series they ended up dropping. And they end up sweeping the Guardians, salvaging that homestand, going 4-2 against the White Sox and Guards. But Will Benson.
Can I interject something
there? Yeah.
I just want to, obviously Terry Francona spent 11 seasons managing the Guardians up until taking the year off in 2024. He comes back this year with the Reds. First time he sees the Guardians, they squelch him. 3-0. Who else did he bring with him from Cleveland? Chris Valleca, the hitting coach for all those young hitters in Cleveland. He knows those guys inside and out. I don't think that's any accident that they were able to do what they did to that Guardians lineup. Those 3 games, and you know that was not insignificant to your point, especially coming off the White Sox series. So I just want to interject that, but sorry, go ahead and continue your point.
That's Gordon. That's why you've got one of the best eyes for the game that I've ever seen. Little things like that color in the gray areas of series, stuff like that makes it fun. But a big reason the Reds are even in the position they are today, such as it is the week that Will Benson had, I know we wanted to talk about that, Gordon. He's the reigning NL Player of the Week. Didn't play 2 of the 3 games, the last 2 games.
He ain't going to win it this week.
Got
to play it to win it.
So that was due to pitching matchups. But you know, what do we think about the Will Benson coming on so strong last week? Is it sustainable? Is that, you know, is this a net positive or something damning about the Reds that Will Benson did what he did and allowed them to do what they did, how they won against the White Sox and Guardians?
What do you think? What's your take on that? You were front and center for the big week, especially with the Guardians. He was with the Guardians, you know, so
yes.
That might have been a little chip on his shoulder, too.
Yeah, I would think whatever so.
That's.
Yeah. I mean, he supplied all the runs on Sunday in the 3-0 win, 2 home runs. Yeah. So obviously huge in that game. Look, it's okay to get, you know, you're going to need guys that you, over the course of the big 162, everyone's going to need to chip in. It's nice. It was a great story that Will Benson, who had a couple long stints in AAA this season, comes up and has the week that he had. It's great story. Totally feel good stuff. He should feel good about it. I don't know if, you know, I mean, absent Will Benson, you know, I think that may have papered over some of the cracks with the rest of the Reds lineup right now. You had pointed out that he drove in 10, what percentage?
10 out of 19. 10 out of the 19 runs they scored in that in the four games before going to Pittsburgh, he drove them in. Thanks to five home runs.
So
take him out of the equation. Maybe you don't have a four-game winning streak.
Yeah. And you know, look, it's what happened. Yeah, it's but you did get that production from him.
Right.
That was good. And if that's what they needed to buy themselves another week in contention going into this Cubs series, I think I'm okay with that. But, you know, it doesn't necessarily speak volumes about what the rest of the lineup did, done.
You're right. I think that there's a case to be made that it underscores the problems with the lineup. This is a guy that started the season in the minors. He got sent down after he got called up the first time, got sent down right away. I think he only had four at bats. They were all strikeouts, got sent down, a called back up. And that's when he started raking, for the week. Right. And that was the amount of time he was up going into the Pittsburgh series. So what does that say about the rest of the lineup? Well, I mean, it says they needed him. I mean, they found a place for him to play because they needed him. And that not much of the rest of the lineup did what he did by himself.
Yeah.
So this is probably somewhat of the recipe that if they do have success, it's going to be kind of like this. Remember, Noelvi Marte is another example of this. He got sent out of camp. To the minors, was hoping to make the club. And by the way, this speaks well of both of those guys, that they went down there and took care of business at Louisville, did not sulk and earned their way back and then contributed. That says a lot about the people they are and the work ethic that they have and the coachability of those guys. So all of that says good things about them. Not to mention talent. But this may be what it looks like all season if these guys get enough production to win enough games to be competitive down the stretch, is that maybe one week it's Will Benson and another week it's Austin Hayes, and then Gavin Lux goes off for 2 weeks, and then Noelvi Marte comes back and gets hot again, because they're not going to stay that way. I just don't see, even Ellie De La Cruz, who's the most talented player in this lineup, went stretches with, you know, just kind of disappearing if you weren't paying attention to him.
Yeah.
He's been pretty consistent this year. He's been good. He's been productive. At times he's been spectacular, but it's not what we saw at this time from him even a year ago. And he was streaky then, and he'll be streaky going forward. That's who these guys are. I just think it's going to be pitching and squeezing enough out of the matchups. Man, the way I see this breaking, this is again part of why the Cubs series coming up is as important for as anything for this reason. We're going to find out how they stack up. A hitter's team is coming to a hitter's ballpark against the team that pitches the best in the division. Let's see what happens. The team that pitches has their starters lined up. Let's see what happens. Let's see how close it is. To your point that it's early in the season, if those games are close, if they're 5-4 games as opposed to 13-9 or 13-4, then maybe there's room to grow into the team that sweeps a series from that group somewhere down the road, or that climbs its way back into things. I think one thing that we haven't talked about that is probably has to happen for the Reds to be a contender. They probably got to go get a bat at the deadline. I mean, I don't know if I'm saying something that just seems overly obvious, but if they don't lengthen the lineup somehow, some way, I just don't know how they do it. And again, another guy we haven't even brought up is Matt McClain, who was expected to be much more, was he expected to be much more than he was. I don't think it was fair for anybody around him to expect things after, you know, what amounted to 3 months in the big leagues in his entire life coming into this year. But now number two hitter's down, number nine hitter, where he belongs if he's going to be in the lineup at all right now, the way he's hitting.
Yeah. Yeah. And just to be clear, your position on the Reds in the wild card hunt, that hasn't changed at all.
The Reds in the, have you seen the National League West? Have you seen the Mets and the Phillies out east? And by the way, the Reds have seen the Braves. They've already lost 3 out of 4 to them, and that's a 500 team right now as we sit here. And they didn't see Spencer Strider, who wasn't back. I don't even know if he's back yet. He might be just coming back. Acuna's not back yet. He's going to be coming back. No way, man. Are you kidding me? They've got the easiest schedule in the game so far. They haven't seen the Mets, the Phillies, the Dodgers, the Diamondbacks, or the Padres, and they're under 500. Ain't no chance. They win. Well, I'll tell you what. I made this promise to Jason Williams a year ago, right about the same time of year. I said if that team made the playoffs, I'd jump in the river. I'm not going to say that this time because I still think there's an avenue here, especially with the manager they've got and the way they pitch. But if that team wins a wild card, if the Cincinnati Reds win a wild card playoff berth this year, I'll jump in the frickin' river in October.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. All right, something to monitor. I know what I'm rooting for now the rest of the way.
Second place in a wild card. Yeah, ain't going to happen. No chance. No chance.
Yeah, you know, you bring up Matt McClain. We had not had a chance to speak about him on the pod because we dedicated our last episode, of course, to Pete Rose and all the breaking news that was coming down almost in real time, literally in real time, as we were recording that podcast last week. But since we now, last,
by the way, anybody who hasn't listened to that podcast, I'm sorry to interrupt you again, Pat.
Yeah,
go back and listen to that because there's some for me how the process works too. Now that he's had his ban lifted. And anybody who's interested in the Pete Rose situation, go back and listen to that podcast if you haven't. That's all I got to say. I just wanted to pimp our podcast.
Yeah, of course. Nothing wrong with that. But since we had our last chance on the pod to really break down the current Reds, Matt McClain was moved down in the batting order. And that's been one of the bigger stories that we've been watching unfold over the last couple weeks. Well, Gordon.
What do you think? Let me ask you this, Pat. When it comes to Matt McClain, we saw him for 3 months. He finished the season in 2023 hurt, an oblique. But for 3 months leading up to that, he was their best player. He might be their best shortstop right now. He might be their best defender. He's their best defensive infielder, I would say. Right now, might be their best shortstop. That's a different debate for a different day.
Sure.
He's not hitting. He hasn't hit really after the first week of this season. He had a little bit of an injury, hamstring, I think it was, and was on the IL briefly. Hasn't hit since he's come back. Wasn't hitting leading up to that. It's been 2 months. It's been pretty close to 2 months this year.
Yeah.
It was only 3 months in 2023. We know he missed all last year with a shoulder injury. Is he who we saw when he jumped the league in 2023 as a hitter? Or is this who he is?
Wow, what a question. I think... Is it, first, let me ask you this, and then I'll give you my response. Is it unreasonable to think that he could still be getting acclimated after missing more than a year for different injuries? Is it too much to ask that he be given 2 months, at least 2 months, to sort himself out?
I suppose that's reasonable. I don't buy it, but I suppose that's reasonable.
Okay. I have wondered throughout the first couple months here if Matt is still getting caught up on missing the amount of time that he did. But, you know, he's 25 now, you know, this is a little bit different than the way he, as you said, jumped baseball in 2023. It's, you know, you need more from the guy, from his bat anyway. And, you know, and he's shown signs of life down in at the bottom of this order. It hasn't been great. It's been better. You know, he's not close to looking like the 290 hitter that he was in 2023. I think his average is up around 170 or something now. And that's an improvement. That is an improvement over the last couple of weeks. But I mean, at least the defensively, he's been consistent. But you need it both ways with Matt, and yep. You're definitely not getting it. Whether Matt McClain going forward is going to be more of what we saw in 2023 or more of what we're seeing right now, man, two real extremes there, because he was so good in 2023 for that period of time. I want to say that I'm going to hedge Gordon and say that he's probably somewhere for his career. He's probably somewhere in the middle, because I have to think he's better than the 170 hitter he is today.
Yeah. You know, the thing is, I agree with you. I mean, it was, you know, maybe that was an unfair question, because I don't think he's either one of those extremes. He may grow into the hitter we saw in 2023.
Yeah,
but to expect that he would come back and be that guy. Now, he's got the kind of swing that plays in the big leagues. You know, he should be making a little more contact. He's got pop. He's got wheels. I mean, I think he'll be okay. A lot of this is the league adjusting to him. And maybe some of it is what you said, still coming back from missing a whole year last year. Probably hanging down there in a 9 spot for a while, even after he maybe gets if his bat warms up, still leading down there for a little while. Let him build some confidence.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this is a game of confidence, too. I'm sure his confidence isn't doing real well right now. And so that's probably a lot of it, too. I think he'll ultimately be a fine major league everyday baseball player. And in many ways, he is right now. He may even wind up being a star. And so I don't want to suggest that what he is now is who he is as a ball player, but it is concerning. It probably should be concerning. And I'm sure he's not feeling great about himself right now. I think he'll be okay. This is one of those examples of it's a long season. And let's see what he looks like, you know, by the end of August. I do think he's too talented to think that he's not going to break out of this and maybe even have a really big month at some point here before too long.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, maybe this weekend against the Cubs. It's not like they've got the best pitching going and there should be plenty of guys at the ballpark.
What a time. I know the Reds would welcome it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, let's see what happens and see you in a little while, whether it looks like I'll be jumping in a river.
Wow. But, you put it out there. I didn't think you would, but here we are again.
Yeah. I didn't think I would either. I thought I dodged my bullet last year. I'm not going to keep doing this every year until the damn river, but I do. But in this case, I mean, I just kind of, I feel more strongly about the wild card thing this year than I did about the playoff situation in May of last year. So,
all right. You can't keep running the same trope out every year. Or eventually, I'm just going to say that you just something. There's something luring you.
Eventually, you will push me in. You just push me in the river.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Don't put it past me.
Well, hey, I think that's probably where we should end this one right now. So thanks for listening, everyone. For Pat, for Phil, I'm Gordon. We'll catch you next week and probably have something to say about what the Reds look like in the division after facing the Chicago Cubs, who are in first place by too many games for the Reds. Anyway, take care. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening to the Big Pod Machine.